Do you remember what you were doing back in March 2011? I'll give you a hint. It's when the Nintendo 3DS was launched in the United States and Europe and Australia and other places. It's also when the Syrian Civil War started, and it hasn't stopped yet. In 7 years, well over 100,000 civilians have been killed, including women, children, and the elderly. Over half of Syria's doctors have fled, and thanks to the Assad government's policy restricting access to health services in unsympathetic areas, once rare infectious diseases have spread rapidly, mostly affecting very young children. This includes typhoid, tuberculosis, diphtheria, and polio. If you're listening to this and thinking, oh my god, how is that still happening? Text the words GIVE SYRIA to 80100 and you'll donate $10 to the Syrian Refugee Relief Fund. This only works for U.S. mobile phones, but if you're an international listener or you'd like to donate in other ways, you should go to globalgiving.org and learn how you can help. Text the words GIVE SYRIA to 80100 and donate $10 or visit globalgiving.org.
For some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge, and lay maintain with a course saving the colleges. To HG 101, we give the honor, thanks to Kirk, a lot of Xerxes to host it proper, as well as to Tanga, Cal and Bobinator, Hooker, Hart, and others discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure, and look, they wrote a book about it, go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease and add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
Taking a bath in the middle of the battlefield. That cool.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. This episode, we're going to be talking about a little game called Light Crusader. It was nominated by Jay-Z Bad Blood on iTunes, so we had to do it. But we don't mind doing it. It was developed by Treasure. It was published by Sega for the Genesis. Early release date appears to be the United States, May 25th, 1995. So it's a pretty late Genesis game. Who's with me to talk about this one?
I'm Bobinator.
I'm Kyle.
And I'm the Great Clade.
Never heard of him. Light Crusader. As I just said, like every time I say it's a Treasure developed game, I feel like that just doesn't seem. It's not that it doesn't seem right because the game's not like high quality or high polish. It just doesn't seem like a game that Treasure would make.
Until you start playing it, and then it's like, oh yeah, no, this is totally Treasure.
Yeah, there's definitely stuff in it. But you know what I mean? Like, it just, like, I don't know, like, Bob, you said something funny about this earlier, right? About how it's like...
Yeah. What I said was, it feels like a bunch of random people who are really into computer RPGs came to Treasure one night while everybody was sleeping, and they just made a game with their computers, and when everybody else woke up, the game was just there, fully formed.
It's like, not wrong.
It's like the boss, the Cacho, fell asleep or something, and they're like, oh, now's our chance to work on Light Crusader, the game that's kind of like the Immortal meets Zelda
good.
Or Landstalker.
It's like the Immortal meets good. Like
the most untreasure game Treasure has ever done, I would say, except maybe the Tiny Toons games.
No, those are super Treasure-y. They're just like, they just are like the most American possible IP. This one, though, it's about a guy, so let's talk about Landstalker. Like, what's the story? Or not Landstalker. There, I did it again. Light Crusader. So, the story of Light Crusader is you're a guy who's been summoned to a thing.
Well, the great thing is, like, at least in English, you're going on a holiday. Like, you're some knight, and I think King Arthur or whatever's like, you're working too hard. Go on vacation. And you're like, cool. I'm going to go through a long cutscene where I ride slowly to my vacation.
You look sort of like David Lee Roth or something in a breastplate, and your name is Sir David, I think. And, yeah,
I mean, look, it sounds silly, but, like, knights had regular, you know, biblical names like David, right? Like, that's perfectly reasonable.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's nothing weird. Like, it's just the thing is like, you get summoned to this place by the king, I guess, and he's like, Sir David, I know of a castle where the floor is 80% spikes. You must go there, you know. And, yeah, so it's like an isometric game. It does, if you don't watch, if you just see a still screenshot of it, and it's not like a crazy boss fight, you would think, oh, this looks like a sequel to The Immortal. It really does. Like, it's a very, like, Western, like, you know, D&D Monster Manual style artwork.
The portraits are, like, super, like, they feel, like, digitized of, like, Western development, like something like EA would have done in the 80s. Like,
yeah, everything about it just feels like they were trying to put out something different for the Japanese market. Like, I don't, although it was released here first, I just feel like I could be completely wrong about this. This is pure conjecture, but I think that, like, it seems like they're like, this is something that will be different for, like, the Mega Drive owners who want something like, you know, it'll be like, you know, one of our games, but it'll just be different looking enough that'll be, you know, but it'll, you know.
It does strike, and they deliver.
It does strike me as like a Mega Drive game between the isometric, the slightly Western aesthetic, the extreme violence. Like,
yeah, like The Mortal, it has like beheadings and stuff. It's not like gory. At least I don't remember it being that way. But
it doesn't have the like squick that The Immortal has. But
no, it sort of surprised me. Like, you just start whacking a zombie and just suddenly just flies in half. You don't expect that.
Well, so you fight some like orcs or something in the beginning, their heads just like start, like they just fly off in like a perfect like tail, like, you know, top spin or something, like just like their head is just spinning as it goes to the ground as if they were.
You can't, like, do that. It's cool.
I don't know. Every time I cut off someone's head, it just kind of falls off.
Well, it takes a lot of practice, Xerxes. Come on.
I don't have that kind of time. I've got people to kill, places to go. So,
You should go on holiday.
Yeah.
This is getting stupid.
Really?
The thing about this one is it's basically you have like a town that works exactly like an RPG town. Like, it's just an RPG town. There's nothing else going on really there. Like, you got stores and you can buy things and you can chat to the people in the town. And then you basically just go into the game's dungeon, and then you just go to the dungeon, do some stuff, leave the dungeon, you know, to recover, and then go back in, and it's just kind of like back and forth, I believe.
Very dungeon crawler-esque, really. Like,
is there only one dungeon that just keeps going?
Yep.
I can't remember. Is the dungeon right beneath the town somehow? Like, yep. Like so it's truly dungeon crawler logic here, where it's like,
wait, what,
yes,
Diablo,
we have built our town atop this hellish maze.
It was like 96, like a year after.
Okay, I was thinking it was like right about the same time, because it's also in the graveyard in this game, so.
Right, well, so this game, they don't even seem to know that there is a giant sprawling labyrinthian dungeon underneath their town of, like, cows. Like,
yeah.
They're just like, cows. People are disappearing, we don't get it. What's going on?
That's another thing from Diablo, you can interact with cows.
Yep, that's a cow, all right.
Clearly, Blizzard are a bunch of hacks who stole literally from this game. We should call them out.
Yeah, let's do it
now. I'm sure they're listening.
Actually, there's some... Well, screw Blizzard. Actually, didn't I call them out?
Just
like,
wait, just wait. The next thing they're going to do, they're going to be like announcing their next big game, and it's a Light Crusader port to the iPhone. And people will just, they'll like, their heads will explode in two places.
And it's got an Easter egg saying, "We heard you, Bob, Xerxes, and Cal," yeah. And the other guy.
So what I like about this one, though, is that there's like this weird like sense of humor in parts of this game. Like, you can meet a lady who's playing a piano, and she's like, "You want to hear my piano music?" And so you say yes, because you're like, all right. And whereas, I guess with a SNES game, you'd get some nice synthesized samples of piano. Instead, it's just blah, 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 blah. She just sucks at the piano.
Yeah, sorry, I actually suck.
Yeah, it's great. I'm not being great at hiding this, but I really like this game because it started out and I'm like, oh, this is isometric. And oh, it sounds like it's going to be this big, sprawling, long, dumb thing. And then, well, I mean, sort of. But then the game's like, oh.
Long.
It's a long game. Yeah, I wish I could have gotten more into it. But then the game, and then you're just kind of like, oh, here's a dungeon. Just play this dungeon forever. I'm like, oh, yay.
Yeah.
It's too bad. Yeah.
It never really breaks that. It's an interesting thing. Like, you've got your map, which this game uses only 3 buttons, plus the stop button, because it's still a Mega Drive game. I'm a little surprised it didn't try and do a 6-button thing, because they... around 95, they were pretty happy to just kind of nudge you and say, please just get the 6-button controller.
Look, they had to hurry up before the boss woke up. So it's like, yeah. You don't have to.
Well, that's why it came out in 95.
The boss fell asleep on their 6-button controller. He was like, on the controls. Like, we can't, dare we take it out from underneath them? Do we have something to replace it with?
They only have one for the dev kit, damn it.
Well, you know, it's a small operation.
I just like the idea that that's the reason it came out in 95, because they had to keep doing it at night, and they're like, oh, we got 20 minutes to work on this game.
Yeah, somebody played The Immortal in, like, 1991, and was like, we've got to do this.
Like, that's the thing
this.
About this one, though, right? It super feels like a 1990, 1991, like, yeah. Gameplay-wise, like, the graphics and everything that it pushes in terms of the actual system, it's totally a 1995 late release, but
yeah, yeah.
The actual feel is pretty old school. But it's got stuff like... like sort of proper physics, like you've got puzzles where you push things around and they
yeah
proper get out of here
yeah
well what? Yeah
you I'm write sorry. Proper physics for the Sega Mega Drive, Mr. Smarty Pants.
Well,
if you,
yeah
if
but
you
I mean
touch something and it moves, that's physics,
and then it can fall from game. A height to a lower height. That's pretty impressive.
Okay, fine, but I've got platforms going over my head that apparently I can't walk underneath.
See, here's the problem. Okay, the physics are not the problem. The physics combined with isometric perspective is the problem.
Although, that said, the platforming in this game isn't god-awful.
You've got a shadow, so it works all right. Thank
one more thing real quick.
If your isometric game doesn't have shadows, it's instantaneously, immediately terrible. There's just no
does
way.
Does 3D right. Blast have shadows?
What?
Does 3D Blast, Sonic, does that have shadows?
I'm pretty sure
yeah, it
shadows.
Does. Okay.
Can I this game controls a lot better, so...
Yeah, so we should talk about like a little bit more about what the gameplay's like, because so far we've just said it's isometric and confusing.
While we're talking about physics, I want to make one tangent real quick. I love how you can like push like anything around, even like NPCs.
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
Stack them on top of each other if you want to, and that just really amused me.
It's great. So it's like Zelda. You got a bunch of puzzles and encounters in one room, and they don't do anything else in another room.
It's like an action RPG with like 70% less RPG. You know, like, it's just, it's not really an RPG. It's more like a, it's like if Zelda was just one dungeon after another, but you could, like, leave the dungeon and heal up and then go back in.
And it's actually really easy to leave the dungeon, because there's basically a warp point that, your save points allow you to warp back to the, town. So.
Right.
You don't even
have to. Etrian Odyssey type. Yeah. But it really is like an action game. It's like a, not really like a reflex action game. It's more like a figure out the...
Yeah, it's like methodical. Like, you've got your enemies and they're like, I'm going to stand here and then swing my hammer. And you're like, okay, so I don't stand there when they're swinging their hammer and then I come back and I hit them.
Oh, yeah. So that's where I sort of came to really love this game. Because you don't die fast and that feels really, really good. I was thinking about this the whole time I played it. I still couldn't figure out how to put it into words. It's forgiving. It's really nice for a Mega Drive game with a weird isometric perspective.
Given that isometrics games are kind of notable for usually just being mean as hell, I'd say this one goes out of its way to be generous. Like, including...
And it's...
It automatically consumes consumable health items.
It does it intelligently, as far as I could tell. Like, it wouldn't just, like, munch everything in a line. It was like, oh, okay, you lost a little health, so we'll use your little item. And, oh, you're almost a lot of health, so let's use the big item.
Yeah, it's not like you get a paper cut and you're like, I'm wolfing down this hoagie. It's an emergency.
How do you heal your paper cuts?
Fit in there.
But, and it's not overly easy, though, either. I mean...
I would say no. Yeah, no, it is not.
But, like... I mean,
it's a treasure game, and treasure games, this is one of the treasure elements. Treasure games are like, here is the boss, here is the puzzle, do what we want you to do, and you will find it totally doable. But if you refuse to engage what we want you to do, you're gonna get glossed. Like, that.
Yeah! The dragon at the beginning of the game, not to spoil too much, but there's a dragon in the RPG, like, he was totally like, okay... This is where you have to pay attention, because this whole area is just going to kill you. If you stand right here, it's like, oh, okay, I got this figured out after dying 3 times. Sweet.
Yeah, I mean, it's got, you know, it's got stuff. Like, you collect items, like Zelda style, sort of. But your attacks are pretty bland. Like, I don't think there's that much variation in them.
Well, they do
you
is...
You get, like, a jump attack,
yeah,
which is cool as hell.
Your kit is your kit. You start with your sword and your... That's like, and you get to like upgrade your sword so it does more damage and that kind of thing. I guess the chief gimmick, which we'll definitely have to mention, is because the guy that was in charge of the treasure power-up system was, sleepwalked in and accidentally wrote it into the game. It has, like, the exact same power-up system that Gunstar Hero has, except taken up a notch. You've got...
And the same icons.
Yeah.
I noticed that, and I was like, hey! That's what that treasure logo was at the beginning.
smart reuse there. Yeah, so you got your, like, whatever, your fire and stuff, and your traditional video game elements.
Isn't there a character? I'm thinking like there's probably more Ultima influence in this than we've probably recognized yet. But isn't one of the characters named actually Garriott?
Yeah, I think so.
Who is that? I don't think I met him.
I would probably have thought it was an old timey name and just totally glossed over it.
But. Well, yeah, Noah.
No, Ultima actually was popular enough. I mean, I think.
Well, I think you're right. I think that they probably did look at it. I just mean I would have read the name Garriott and went, "Yep, that's an old timey name." I would have.
Yeah. It may have just been Garriott, though. I kind of think I know what he's talking about, but yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised.
It explains the portraits, now they're thinking about it.
There's a lot of Western influence in it. There's no doubt about that aspect.
And there's also, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, time travel.
I didn't get that far.
So what I'll say, because the game basically, it's pretty, I'd say it's almost tepid. It's got that kind of isometric dryness where it's a lot of the same dungeon with a lot of the same enemies over and over for about 2 to 3 hours. You know, I think the tile set changes once or twice. And then suddenly it's like, and now you've got to go to all the different places. And suddenly the game starts throwing you to a bunch of crazy places for like less than 20 minutes each.
Yeah, you go to medieval Japan, you fight magic ninjas, you teleport.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I'm going to have to finish this.
And you're like, it just throws you into all these places. The plot does kind of tell you why, but it's just pretty clear that someone at Treasure must have been like, we got to put more in. Like, I don't know, they go above and beyond. That's something you always can say about the Treasure games is they never shortchange you. They're always like, we could do more. And so they did.
My thing and then you with fight the game a tank. Is
a tank.
That is true.
Just a tank. It's from, like, Desert Storm. It's a tank with a sword.
My problem with the game is that I really kind of enjoyed what I played, at least the idea of it, but anytime there's a physics puzzle, I feel like the perspective just gets in the way too much for it to be enjoyable.
I mean, it also gets in the way of the boss fights and certain boss fights. Yeah. Like, look, so, like, because it's an isometric game, you've got to have, like, floating tiles that come at you, and they're, like, tile-shaped things, and they swirl around, and you've got to, like, be in the middle of their, you know, they come at you in sine wave patterns. And it's really hard to tell where those tiles actually are. Is it in front of you? Is it behind you? I don't know, but you were just hit by it.
I love all the sine waves and stuff because you can totally see that they were able to write, you know, like sine waves or like little like curve generators or something. And they were like, yes, yeah, it's going in. Put in a sine wave.
It's the kids of the Treasure guys that are making a game.
They cracked the code for the sine waves right after they figured out the pulsating orb algorithm.
It's a lot of pulsating orbs and balls.
A lot of trembling, quivering, pulsating balls everywhere.
I can see if AGDQ cover this game because they love orbs.
Because, yeah, like, and that's one thing that I really liked about this one is that it was full of balls. And I love balls, the video game. By PF Magic, and that's great.
I know someone's going to clip that.
We all love Balls forever, the Video right? Game by PF Magic.
You know, because that really brings it back to straddling the ball centipede, because this basically is a ball centipede in this game, and we haven't...
Oh, yeah.
We haven't had a ball centipede-themed video game in a while, but...
There's also a scorpion made out of balls, a genie made out of balls.
The dragon has...
Yeah, it's got, like, ball legs and stuff, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's got ball legs.
Like, tiny little balls.
I think the whole body is, but...
But it's pretty good, because it means that they animate quite interestingly, and they don't mess around. Like, there's, like, a giant spider boss that's huge by, like, the standards of the platform.
Even one of the first bosses you fight, which is this kind of weird, like, it's another quivering mass, you know, that rises from the floor.
There's a few quivering masses in this, with all the
gigantic,
balls.
Has gigantic pores that sprout purple ball strands and fireballs and...
Excuse me, they're teal.
And a big, like, eyeball, like, topper, and you can jump on top of it.
I mean,
and,
what's
like,
the thing?
Smack
like,
the eyeball on the top.
Like, is it tryptophobia or whatever? Trilotrypophobia? You know, where there's, like,
the fear of falling?
No, the thing with, like, people who can't stand, like, holes. It's a thing. It's like a really common phobia. This game's full of that. It's got like a lot of just masses that have like things going in and out of them. It's like, yeah, it's a bit.
What's going on there?
Silent Hill Zero.
Oddly enough, like a cat would love that boss. They would go, like, if you just brought in a giant cat, just the stuff going peeking in and out of the little holes, they'd be like,
oh man, you just reminded me another non sequitur about this game I want to bring up.
The ninjas drop baguettes.
Find the cat shop.
I found the cat shop. I loved it.
Oh, yeah, I did. Man, this game's got so much stuff in it.
Because it's like really got a sense of humor to it, which is really odd. Because, you go into the cat
shop. Best game of all time.
And the cat just meows at you. And if you try and take its stuff, it meows at you and yells at you. But it'll buy stuff off you. And it'll pay for it.
I never realized that part.
It has a usage. It'll buy your item. Oh, okay. But it won't sell you its fish. The fish are not for sale, as far as I know.
Yeah. Like, this is... It's totally a Genesis RPG because it's big and doesn't explain things very well. But man, it's
not an RPG.
It's really
okay.
Not.
Fine, it's a Genesis Swords and Sorcery game.
It's such an odd one. Like I don't love playing the game. Pretends. To be perfectly honest, because I don't
Wrong,
enjoy
be perfectly honest
the combat like that much. And the physics puzzles and most of the puzzles, once you've solved like 6 or 7 of them, you really don't need to solve any more. You know, you've solved the puzzles, but they keep going and you keep saving people in distress, which they have a lot of art drawn as well. Like, you know, people tied up, people tied up with tentacles, people tied up on the floor. Anyway, it's an interesting one, and I can understand why this one came out in 95 and why it's not like one that people kind of really go back to that much, or it's not like part of Treasure.
It's an expensive cartridge, though. It's hard to, at least it was.
Gonna ask. I've never heard of this game prior to seeing it on the list. So.
Yeah, I always get it confused with Crusader of Senti, which I feel like I've bought used twice thinking it was this game. I'm like, oh, that game's rare. I should snatch it while I have the chance. No.
Crusader of Senti is pretty good, though. Between Crusader of Senti and Land Stalker, I can never remember this game. Like, between those two games.
You can buy this game new for $50.
But I will finish with the... I didn't actually say that you get to mix and match your magic. I was almost finished with that sentence.
Oh, yeah.
But it's actually really cool because you basically, like, you can mix the four elements together in different ways and it produces, what, like, 12-ish unique magics or something? Which is pretty cool because you got, like, you know, you can shoot swords and you can, you know, throw fireballs and explosions and obviously healing magic and stuff. And it's pretty clever. Like, it's one of the more interesting aspects of the game as presented.
Yeah.
Yeah. Play it.
Play it. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. I don't know...
It looks like a loose cart of Light Crusader can be gotten for about $9, $10.
And it's on the Steam thing, I think, too.
It came in a cardboard box, so good luck finding it with that.
Well, those cardboard boxes are like $1 billion.
Yeah, you'll never get that. But I kind of like it because then it gives me an excuse. Like, I don't have to get the clamshell. Like, I can, you know. You could buy an aftermarket clamshell for this. That'd probably be better. Yeah, so let's rank it. I think it's pretty good. I don't think it's great. I don't know. Like, it's hard to say. Like, I admire the game. Like, I'm glad it's...
If I
had played it when it was new, I probably would have loved it.
Can I say I think it's better than Landstalker? That's for sure.
I agree with you, actually, because the boss battles alone are so over the top.
That's the kind of Zelda-y... Is that... Landstalker was... I think I've played a little Landstalker.
So the thing about Landstalker is I think this game does the isometric sort of dungeon fighting game better. It does a much better job of that kind of gameplay. I think it's...
Yeah, it might be one of my favorite isometric console games ever, so
like it does push quite hard to be a good isometric combat game. It makes sense that Treasure of all companies were like, I reckon we can make an isometric combat game, we can get there. I think it falls short, but I it's one of my favorite, I guess, attempts at getting it right, because it almost does.
Like, I'm gonna finish this game one of these days, I promise.
And it doesn't shortchange you either. Like, this game is like 4 hours long and it's got a lot of stuff. You got unique bosses and enemies right through the whole game. It's
the hallmark of Treasure. They don't It's like certain other developers, I feel like, although they're very good developers, but they have no problem being like, yeah, it's like a palette swapped version of the guy you fought like before.
Right. Like,
deal with it. Yeah. It's like, who cares? Like, it's still fun, right? And if the game's good enough, it's true. But this game, actually, they go the extra mile. It's like, you know.
You know, there's some other stuff in there. I'm going to spoil this one. I have to do it because it's really good. You got an item that actually lets you disguise yourself as a monster, and then you can talk to the monsters. That's in there. They won't attack you. You disguise yourself as like an orcman, and you actually can talk to the monsters and stuff. So it just keeps being pretty strange. You know, it's just
pretty cool
out there. So I gotta say,
could we just set this again to the side? Don't rank it. Just say play it.
No. We rank things, and then we're wrong, and that's the way it works. So
fine. Let's be really wrong. Number one.
No, you don't even, you know what? That's it. You don't get to rank this game. Everyone else gets to rank this game. You don't.
Oh, what a difference.
So at 294, we have Silhouette Mirage. I'm just going with treasure games, you know, just the bounces of the treasure games at the moment.
Actually, I like this one more in Silhouette Mirage.
Yeah, they didn't mess with the difficulty as far as I'm aware with this one, so.
Well, Silhouette Mirage, we've discussed, also has problems beyond the messed up difficulty, I'm afraid.
So. And so then you can bump it up a little bit. 286, The Immortal. Now...
yep.
I gotta put it above The Immortal. Yeah, although me too. I respect The Immortal for being just so, like, just balls to the wall crazy, but it's, you know, its quivering ball ratio is shockingly low, you know?
Yeah, between...
It doesn't have a lot of... You know, it's like, the thing about The Immortal is that, like, you... Once you've finished it, it's kind of like... It's punishing, but it's very short, and...
Yeah, like...
It's kind of like, the cool parts are sort of... You got to give it to The Immortal for the punch out style combat stuff, which is pretty cool. It's a cool innovation, a cool like blending of the dungeon crawler and action game in a way that, you know, it frankly deserves more credit for. But if you're going to take that out of it, I feel like this is.
I mean, that's like 30 minutes a good game in The Immortal. I think you get a little bit more in Lightbringer.
Yeah, it's more that it's just like Light Crusader. It's more like you just get sort of done with it. I think it's just a little bit too long.
Yeah, the thing that bothers me about Light Crusader is that, as I said, I really feel like the bit where you go to all the interesting, fun, alternate places is way too late in the game. Like, that's in, like, the last, like, 40 minutes of the game, basically. Like, the last hour, last 40 minutes, is where they're like, oh, here's 8 different tile sets and a bunch of other random crap. And it's like, what? Why now? Why not when I was bored 2 hours ago?
If this is a game where, like, a medieval swordsman fights a tank, you should probably, like, advertise that pretty close to the front of the game. Like,
yeah, you put that on the cover. You've got, like, your guy's like, whoa, and there's a tank in the background.
Should be a guy just, like, on top of a tank just whacking it with a sword.
Yeah, but anyone would get it mixed up with Gangground. And
I really like Gangground.
Me too.
Can we put it above Shadow Man? Always. Shadow Man was interesting, but okay, that's fair.
Where are we now?
Above Dragon
280.
Force. I like Dragon Force too much.
Well, it's a good thing everyone else is here. I mean, I gotta put this one at the very least. 274 is Super C. It's gotta go above Super C. I don't care enough about Super C.
I'd be putting it at just for the, like, it's a treasure game. It's pretty well made. It's a very late Mega Drive game. It's got a lot going for it in terms of just uniqueness. This is why I want to put it a little bit on the higher side. And so I kind of want to say, like, it's not quite... I got to put it above, like, Jet Force Gemini. And so that's bumping it up a little bit.
Here's an idea, okay? How about between Sega Sonic the Hedgehog and Gallius?
Where's that? That's a little bit lower.
That's 265.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So I think it's better than Sega Sonic the Hedgehog.
Poor Sega Sonic the Hedgehog. What? It's trying so hard.
Oh, wait, hold on.
Always sticking it to it.
It's better than Bad Day on the Midway.
It's just like, it's like, it's better than Tapper. It's better than Tales of the Abyss. Tales of Abyss.
Naturally.
Blaster Master is a tough one, but it's better than Lunar. It's better than Saga Frontier.
I mean, it's better.
Star Tropics, G.I. Joe, Transartica. That's where I'm starting to wonder whether it's...
You could compare it a lot to Star Tropics. I don't know if it's better than that.
I don't think it is better than Star Tropics. So I have to say that's my ceiling. Star Tropics is just like, it's... It seems more derivative of Zelda, but it's actually not, because of the way the movement works, right? Like, there's like the hopping stuff, and
I think the irony of this game is that it's bloated, essentially. Like, this game could be leaner. It's a dungeon game, so it really wants to be a longer game, but by the result of being longer, it doesn't add anything except make it a longer game. Like, all of the wandering around the dungeon, all of the tedium.
That's where they add in the ninjas and the tanks and the, you know, like, I mean, it's, they, at least they're like, well, if we're going to make the game that much longer, like, let's go nuts. Let's go.
Remember, there's some beat 'em up that has like six levels of the same enemy over and over again. So
that sounds like half of them.
I
can't pinpoint what game you're talking about there, because that's a lot.
There's a lot of them. Yeah.
I did that on purpose. Yes.
All right.
Oh, okay.
Well, good. like, I do want to like this game, but I wouldn't go back to it personally. Like, I'm not personally going to reopen this game to play it anymore. Like, that's, I know
I
that.
Just don't understand how Umjammer Lammy ended up so, I guess because it's not Parappa, maybe. All right, look. What about below Blaster Master, above Tales of Abyss?
I'm okay with that.
Don't Two. Think I'm going to talk you down right below Tales of Abyss.
Probably not, because you're the only maniac that likes that game.
It's missing an article, man. It should be Tales of the Abyss, and it's not.
Well, I played the game 7 times to find the article. So I promise you it's not there.
Is the game set in Abyss?
Yeah, sort of.
Okay, well then it can be Tales of Abyss.
Yeah, but it shouldn't be.
Well, the whole game like revolves around being this big abyss.
Do you kill teleporting ninjas and do they drop baguettes?
Yeah, actually.
They do?
You'd have to You have to play Tales of Abyss to find out. Are you serious?
I'm not really.
Give me a second. I'm trying to remember if this game has ninjas in it. I'm pretty sure there are ninjas in Tales of Abyss, yeah.
But do they drop baguettes when you kill baguettes?
All Tales games have food in them, so it's quite possible that they drop baguettes.
Does it have a tank?
I don't know what to think now. That's what I like about when you kill the ninjas in this game, they'll drop... I saw them dropping fish. Kind of makes sense. Not cooked fish. Well, just
orcs
like a whole
were
fish.
Dropping baguettes.
They drop eggs, which I guess, again, maybe that's like part of their ninja training. Like, don't break the egg. Like, kill these dudes and don't break the egg. But they also drop baguettes.
So I can see ninjas dropping baguettes in like the 1800s sort of period. You know, you got to get late ninja period after the Dutch have shown up with the bread. Then they can have baguettes. It might even be like, set during that time period, by the way. I don't know.
Yeah.
For all we know, but it is.
No, I'm pretty sure that happens in Tales of Abyss. Yeah.
Okay, well.
Don't worry, I'm still putting above Tales of Abyss. This is a completely
pointless. All right, great. That's where it goes. So,
damn it!
This goes, it's the new 260 as of this recording. I don't know why we announced the numbers as if it's going to be the same thing by the
time. It's almost always a different number. Like, haven't we ranked a completely other game already?
So there it goes, between Blaster Master and Tales of Abyss, like Crusader, I almost say Crusader Ascenti again. Thank you, Jay-Z Bad Blood. For your 5-star review on iTunes. And remember, if you want us to play a crazy game that you love and you want us to do it as soon as we possibly can, that's how you do it. 5-star review on iTunes. We'll get to it within 8 months or your money back.
Oh, don't say that.
Well, the podcast is free.
What if they're on our Patreon? Please join the Patreon and then we won't get.
Join the Patreon.
Join the Patreon. No money back.
Yeah.
No money back. No money back. All sales are final.
That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our booking agent Jeff Rood, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101, I know I did, by subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HG Discord, but most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.